We're doing things a little bit differently today, jumping into the message a little early, and as we make time for some other reflection through music and song a little bit as we go along this morning. Well, apparently, Christmas is in the air. Commercials are already everywhere. Holiday flyers are coming in your mail. The town of Qualicum Beach already had snowman flags lining 2nd Avenue weeks ago. But here at Oceanside, we're keeping it real with messages on suffering and death and grief. We know how to do it here. But seriously, I love journeying with you through all of these difficult topics, not just keeping it surface level, because it brings us closer together as a community. Just a quick note to wrap up the last message, and particularly about burial and funerals. By funeral, just so you know, I don't mean some elaborate or expensive service. That's not the point. And in fact, we recommend as simple as possible without emphasizing convenience over depth and meaning. But we simply mean have a Christian service that properly mourns and celebrates one's life, which is what people here have done, as well as consider a smaller additional Christian burial service or even spreading of ashes if you're doing that. And speaking of cremation, as I said, it's not a scriptural right or wrong kind of thing. Just to put you at ease, I'm pretty sure every single memorial service we've done here, probably 15 or more, has in fact been all cremations. I imagine most services we do here will be. So it's not like we're saying don't do that. We just want you to think through things and have good Christian reasons for what you're doing, whatever choice it is that you make. And then third, remember that we've provided resources on our church blog page, including this palliative care toolkit in a PDF form on the blog. There's also one copy of this in the library as well. So I love that people are discussing these things, asking questions. That's part of the point of and purpose of these, and happy to chat more with you about it. So just a review on where we've been, what we did. So we talked about suffering and suffering well. We talked about death and dying well as Christians, and we'll bring this series to a close today. Some of you are like, thank goodness, on grief and grieving well. Just a few quick disclaimers. First, I'm no expert on grief. I'm not a grief counselor or a psychologist. Second, the goal is not to be exhaustive here, right? We can't do all of that in one morning. We do a 13-week grief share course here at the church, and the next one begins in late January, and you can sign up actually at the Connect Corner today if you're interested in being contacted about that. There are lots of great resources out there that exist on grief. We have lots in our library in the emotional health section. In fact, we've pulled 10 of them out. They're on center display if you'd like to check those out as well. Third, I know many of you have been through unimaginable loss that I couldn't possibly understand. And my goal is not to put some neat and tidy bow on the experience of grief and to say, this is what it looks like, and this was what you do. I recognize that grief looks very different for everyone. But as has been our question with each of these messages, we want to explore what does it mean or look like to grieve well as Christians. Just as we talked about, what does it mean to suffer well? What does it mean to die well? The starting point should always be to, of course, look to God first. Just as we learn that we worship a God who suffers and therefore enters into our suffering, we also worship a God who grieves and therefore enters into our grief. And so the first point is very simply that God grieves. One of the most striking stories in the gospel is the story of Jesus at the grave of Lazarus, where we get the shortest verse in the entire New Testament. So you can answer that quiz question if you ever get it, which is that Jesus wept at the grave of his good friend Lazarus. But of course, the central place we learn of God's grief is in our central symbol of our faith at the cross, which is an event of suffering and grief. And there's some really deep theology here that I can only touch upon briefly this morning, but we learn in the Gospels that darkness came over the land at Jesus' death for 3 hours, from noon until 3, until Jesus then cried out in grief, my God, why have you forsaken me? So for 3 hours, the Father mourned in darkness over the loss of his son and the death of his own fatherhood. And the son also had to suffer the loss or the absence of the father. And so he grieves, why have you forsaken me, left me? And the Spirit suffers alongside the Son and grieves over the separation of the Father and the Son in that moment. And so the triune God, Father, Son, and Spirit all grieve. And so if God grieves, well, then so do we. And we could say even stronger, so must we. We read earlier from 1 Corinthians 15:54, where it says that when the perishable has been clothed with the imperishable and the mortal with immortality, then the saying that is written will come true. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Then the saying that is written will come true. But until then, it hurts. It stings. And we grieve. And we must learn to grieve and enter into grief. Why? Because, as Casey Gallenberger says, apart from love, grief is perhaps the most universal experience we have, arguably even more so. Therefore, we should prepare ourselves for it because it will come to us all. Grief, in fact, is the price that you pay for love. We are all called to love, but if you love, you will grieve. Grief is not a disorder. It is not for those who are too weak to overcome it. Rather, loss is a part of being human, a necessity, not something some go through and others do not. We don't really get to choose whether or not we enter into grief. It will come to us all, for many much more suddenly and tragically than others. But what we do choose is if we deal with grief in a healthy way. And here's why we need to recognize the reality of grief and learn to grieve in a healthy way, because if we don't, we will suffer physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Pete Shazero says that if we deny or suppress or minimize our sorrow, we will medicate ourselves in some other potentially dangerous way or addictive behavior. And we've probably all seen this happen, perhaps in other people's lives, or perhaps even our own, that if we don't come face to face with the reality that someone is gone, we will likely respond in other ways that are unhealthy and possibly that we will even regret. There is only one true treatment or medication for grief, and that is to grieve. There is no other cure or shortcut. As is often said, the best way through our feelings is through them, meaning we have to allow ourselves to truly feel them, not ignore or run from them, because we cannot heal what we do not feel inside. And we must mourn to truly start healing, because whatever is not grieved is actually held onto within the body. So God grieves and enters into the darkness of grief and loss and separation. And as humans created into created in God's image, we also grieve. But that doesn't make any of it easy or even understandable, because grief is an unexplainable experience. The hardest thing in putting a message together on grief is that there are no words to adequately express the experience of grief. We are grasping at the wind, trying to explain an unexplainable sense of loss that we feel. It's also okay to just admit that this sucks. Right? Death is absolutely horrible. Death is awful. The musical artist Mount Airy, which is Phil Evram from nearby Anacortes, Washington, lost his young wife to cancer, leaving him and his 1.5-year-old daughter behind. And he writes a whole album about his feelings, and it's the most uncomfortable album you will ever listen to. But it starts with a brutally honest assessment of death when he sings, "Death is real. Someone's there, and then they're not. I don't want to learn anything from this." And that's often how it feels. There can't possibly be anything good in this horrible loss. Because grief is a human experience that is so unexplainable, I think that it is helpful to sometimes look to the arts for a way to somehow express the inexpressible, to describe the indescribable. Because when there's no real answers or explanations to something, expression through art is sometimes the best way we can do things as human beings. And it is a grace that God extends to us. And so in the Bible, you get tons of grief-inspired poetry, particularly within the Psalms and even in the prophets. For example, Jeremiah in chapter 9, verse 1 writes, "Oh, that my head were a spring of water and my eyes a fountain of tears. I would weep day and night for the slain of my people." Jeremiah was so filled with grief that he wished he had unending tears to weep day and night to try to express what he feels. One of the most powerful songs or scenes from the music, from the musical Hamilton, any fans out there? I'm a big fan. Is when Alexander is grieving the death of his son, Philip. And he sings lines such as, "There are moments where the words don't reach. There is suffering too terrible to name. And we learn to live with the unimaginable." I admit I'm drawn to songs about death and grief. They're some of my favorites, partly because I do have a dark, fairly depressive personality, but also because some of the most beautiful and honest art comes out of our experiences of pain and loss and grief. That's part of the redemptive quality of suffering. And art and music can sometimes teach us in a healthy way what it looks like to face death and loss head on, and to wrestle with the emotions of loss, to truly feel them and honestly express sometimes the senselessness we often feel amidst the preciousness of life. And perhaps even what it looks like to hope in the face of loss. And so this song is one such song. It's by the Grey Havens' David Radford. It's about his younger brother who died after a battle with mental illness. Not surprisingly, he says it's the hardest song he has ever written. So this song is called Over and Over, and expresses some of the emotions of grief.
There's a song that you played, I remember, and can't get it out of my head. And I've played it over and over and over and over again. Heart of my own, heart, oh, why'd you have to go away? All of me was for you, and I just wish you'd stayed. And I just wish we were together at my house that day. So meet me again in the summer, meet me again past the sea, where we can both sing together. That's where I wanna be. Heart of my own, heart, oh, why'd you have to go away? There was so much here for you, and I just wish you'd stay. I just wish we were together at my house today. There is a promise I cling to. It's all that I have left, that the darkness that took you can't finally win if the last to die is death. And one day we will finally see everything made right. We will rise again and find a song that never dies. And we'll sing it over and over. We'll sing it over and over. We'll sing it over and over and over again.
Well, want to make sure we say that if you or someone you know is considering suicide, to please seek help. You can call or text 988. Also, one thing we offer as a church is free on-site counseling for anything or for any reason, including mental health struggles or grief. And so please visit our counseling page online for more info. Because grief is such a messy mystery, it is also a never-ending, non-linear journey. You've probably heard of the stages of grief, but most agree that grief is not a linear process. Rather, we bounce around from one to another and back again. Grief is not a one-time event. It's not a season in life or a step-by-step process. There is no way to speed up the grief process. And grief and lament are inefficient in a get-things-done-and-fix-it kind of culture. And so we have to fight that and allow for ongoing grief, giving people space to grieve as much as they need for as long as it takes. Christian artist Benjamin Daniel writes an entire album called Home Enough for Now about the death of his mother to horrible disease. And he expresses the imagery of feeling lost in the desert in a song called Manna, and how we often want people to be done with grief and just move on. And he sings, "Speed up the dirge. We need a joyful song. Wish I could sing like there was nothing wrong. How do I thank you for this daily bread when desert implies I'd rather just be dead?" And that's the truth of how we feel in our grief and our loss, sometimes just completely lost and wandering in the desert. In an episode of Grey's Anatomy, don't judge me, just went through a brief phase. I promise I only made it through a couple seasons. And it was during COVID. We all did a lot of dumb things during COVID. But in an episode of Grey's Anatomy, there's a scene and it just stuck with me. And it's when George, one of the intern doctors, loses his dad. And Christina, the other doctor intern, she welcomes George into the dead dad's club because she had also lost her dad. And George says to Christina, "I don't know how to live in a world where my dad doesn't exist." And she says back to him, "Yeah, that never changes." Right? After loss, we never get to live the same life. Upon losing your husband to sudden and aggressive brain cancer in a matter of 6 weeks, Christian author Karen Stiller writes in her book that life as we knew it ended, and life as we didn't want it began. I will spend the rest of my life learning what it means to live in and with sorrow. Because loss is not like an injured or broken limb that will eventually heal and be made whole. Rather, loss is like an amputation. Loss is loss. Once we no longer have that limb. We cannot get it back. It is gone forever in this life. A while back, I lost both of my primary spiritual and pastoral mentors in a short period of time. And I know in no way want to compare this loss to the incredible and tragic loss that many of you have experienced. But these are two people that I kind of shared everything with, that I went to for advice, that I talked to if I was feeling down or depressed. They were also people that I celebrated with, and particularly celebrated milestones in the church because they had journeyed with me through some of those early and very difficult years that were hard and where I often felt very alone and the situation felt impossible at times. And I remember calling one of them the first time that we ever cracked 100 people on a Sunday, not because the numbers are important, but because it just represented a part of that long journey we had been on and the difficulty of that. And they had walked alongside me for that. And so they celebrated with me. Well, just last week, we crossed 400 for the first time ever for just an ordinary Sunday, nothing special about it. And my first inclination is to want to call them or to text them, to celebrate with them. And of course, that's when the reality hits, even though it's been a few years, that they're not there. They are gone. That loss is ongoing in our lives. The loss never goes away. Grief never really ends. And just knowing that will help us in our own grief as well as walk alongside others in their grief, which is sort of where I want to land as a part of our application. Hopefully what's been said is very applicable and helpful, but let me close with two quick applications. Number one is to grieve in community. I know it's hard. But sometimes things that are best and healthiest for us are hard. Going to the gym to exercise is hard. I rarely ever feel like doing it. But I know that it's what my body and my mind needs to stay healthy. And if I ignore that need, there will be long-term consequences that will lead to poor physical or mental health. In the same way, we probably rarely feel like being in community or a worship service when we're grieving or have experienced loss. But that doesn't mean it's not what's best for us. And in the same way as exercise, there will be long-term consequences for our spiritual and physical health if we avoid going through the process in community. Grief doesn't and can't happen in a vacuum or a silo. It intersects with our work, our life, and especially our Christian community. That's part of being a human in God's family. A while back, a family in our congregation had a significant, sudden, and tragic loss. And I expected maybe not to see them at church for a while because the death was well known and publicized and not sure they would really want to face everyone. But there they were that first Sunday after the loss. And I remember saying to one of them, you know, I'm so honored that you would be here with us amidst all that you're going through. And he responded, we knew we needed and that we wanted to be with our church family. And that inspired me. We need to learn to rely on others to help us through our grief. Related to that, just real quick, I realize there could be a long list here, but as a community, there are some things that are unhelpful that keep people from grieving in community. And so we want to do well as a community. So let me just mention a few things. Never say, well, at least, to try to comfort someone. Right? Well, at least you're not alone. Well, at least they died peacefully. There is no silver lining to death. Never say something like God needed another angel or must have wanted them in heaven. It's not even biblically accurate to say that, so please don't. Don't ever say it was God's will, because it's not. As we discuss, death is our enemy and the result of sin, not an original part of God's will or plan. Lastly, don't tell people that God works all things together for good and can bring good out of this. I know that that can be true. It doesn't mean it's helpful in the moment. So can we agree together to try to do our best to make this a safe place for people to grieve? And the best advice, of course, is to say nothing. Just be there for people. Last application as the music team comes is to grieve with Jesus. Jesus makes all the difference. This has been the theme of each message on suffering and death and grief. 1 Thessalonians 4:13 says that even though we mourn, we experience pain, we don't do it like the world, as those with no hope. Rather, we know how the story ends, and that makes all the difference. Jesus makes all the difference. There will be a day we no longer grieve. To quote one last song, Doug Hale from the band Air Review reflects upon losing his 7-week-year-old daughter and sings, "My only comfort while you're gone is that Jesus holds you till I'm home." Because grief never ends, because grief is a journey, because we grieve in Christian community, because grief is unexplainable, and because God also grieves, so we must allow Jesus into our grief to heal, to strengthen, restore, comfort, and to cling to. Psalm 91 describes our God as a refuge and a fortress. My God, in whom I trust, says he will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge. This song is about finding comfort under those strong wings of God, even when facing the loss of someone close. And we hope it helps heal and strengthen your hope.
You slipped from my arms, I knew you had to go, and such a heavy heart, and who could hope to hold? But I know where you're going, and that's the hardest part. No matter where tonight ends, you won't escape your broken. Stay a while, you should stay a while, a while.
Helpless for the world, it tightens up the end. It's not what you
Mighty wings, strong feathers to cover you, to hold you, to be your refuge, to be your strength, because that's who our God is. That is what our God is like. And if you've never experienced that God, that refuge, we encourage you to reach out